good luck devices, aren't we? Like a rabbit's foot or a cross. Somehow, so the thinking goes, your life will go better if you just carry this item with you. It's as if the item has some sort of magical, mystical power about it. In ancient Israel, such an item was the Ark of the Covenant, the container for the two tablets upon which the Ten Commandments were written. In Samuel's time, the Philistines were a perpetual threat to the Israelites. They were always, it seems, causing the Israelites trouble, fighting against the Israelites, threatening them. In the fourth chapter of the book of 1 Samuel, we see that the Israelites are treating the ark like it's some kind of a good luck charm. If they had that item in their possession, Israel thought that that would assure them victory against their enemy, the Philistines. And what is it that leads people to think like this? Well, I suppose that sometimes we think like this because we wish that things could just be that simple. That we could just carry something with us and presto, it just makes everything better. Of course, life is rarely that simple. It's also true that we often find it easier to believe in something that we can see and touch as opposed to believing in God, whom we cannot see and we cannot touch and we cannot control. See, if you've got something like a rabbit's foot, or the Ark of the Covenant, you can control it. But you can't control God. As we look at the fourth chapter of the book of 1 Samuel, we see the utter futility of placing our hopes in anything besides God. It simply, whatever it is, cannot protect us because it wasn't ever God's plan for something to protect us. We need to depend upon someone. But this is always a danger, and so we have to be careful. May this passage that we're going to look at here tonight be a vivid reminder to us to make sure that we put our hope in God. It says this, and Samuel's words came to all Israel. Israel went out to meet the Philistines in battle and camped at Ebenezer, while the Philistines camped at Aphek. The Philistines lined up in battle formation against Israel. And as the battle intensified, Israel was defeated by the Philistines, who struck down about 4,000 men on the battlefield. Now, God's people, you may recall, in the Old Testament, When God led the Israelites out of Egyptian bondage into the promised land, remember what their responsibility was in regard to the people that were living in the land? They were to drive them out, weren't they? Because God knew that if they didn't get those people out of there, that those people would corrupt them. God knew that his people would, if they were mingling with people from other beliefs, and that became something that they were accustomed to doing, that is, living around those kinds of people, that they would, instead of bringing them up to worship God, that those people would bring them down to worship their gods. Now, obviously, God doesn't want the church to operate like that today. That was for a special time. That was a unique period in redemptive history that's now come and gone with the person of Jesus Christ. But there is, nevertheless, a valuable lesson there. Is in our lives, we have to always be pushing sin away. If we allow sin into our lives and we tolerate sin in our lives, what happens is it begins to erode our faith, and it brings us down, and it restricts us, and it begins to rob us of our power, and we become not much of a force for God in the world. And that's what was going on in Israel. It was at the very top they were having corruption, like is almost not even something that we would want to talk about, because Eli's two boys, they were very ungodly men. They were immoral, adulterous. And so, what could you expect from the people when their leaders are acting like that? So the end result is, when they go into battle, they're not strong. Why? Because God's not with them. I mean, God's not going to honor their disobedience. God doesn't operate like that. See, you can't just defy God. You can't just ignore God and then expect God to bless you. But this is what's happening. So they're weak and they're vulnerable, and so they get defeated. Now, verse 3, when the troops returned to the camp, the elders of Israel asked, look at the question that they asked here. Why did the Lord defeat us today before the Philistines? Well, there's a sense in which they're right, and there's a sense in which they're wrong. They are right in the sense that the Lord didn't fight for them, so he did let them get defeated. But it wasn't like the Lord had just said, you know, I'm just going to be mean to my people today, which is the way a lot of people feel when things don't go their way. They just think, oh, God's just not on my side anymore. God's mad at me. God's turned against me. Well, I can assure you, if God has done that, he's done it for a good reason, and the reason is your immorality, your ungodliness. And that's what was going on here, of course. So, it says, let's bring the ark. Notice what they say here in the middle of verse 3. Let's bring the ark of the Lord's covenant from Shiloh. Then it will go with us. Save us from our enemies. Now, some translations say he will go with us and save us from our enemies. Most say it will go with us and save us from our enemies. And that's because in Hebrew, when you're dealing with a third person, you know, it can be he, she, or it. And then the context has to tell you which one it is, oftentimes. And it works like that in Greek as well. And so are they saying here that if we get the ark, then God's going to go with us? Or are they saying, well, if we get the ark, then that ark is going to save us? Well, the context seems to indicate that they think the ark is going to save them. That they really have more confidence in the ark, it seems, than they do in God. So that's why their faith is misplaced, you see. So verse 4 says, though, so the people sent men to Shiloh to bring back the ark of the covenant of the Lord of armies, who is enthroned between the cherubim. See, so they're sort of thinking, well, if we get the ark, then we'll have God, because God's just confined there. They should know better than that. But they're so skewed in their thinking, you see, at this point, that they think God is just, God's there in the ark, and that's it. So the confidence is really misplaced, isn't it? So Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the ark of the covenant of God. Verse 5, when the ark of the covenant of the Lord appeared or entered the camp, all the Israelites raised such a loud shout that the ground shook. Oh, they were excited. They thought, man, we're going to win now because we have the ark, you see. We have our good luck charm. Verse 6, the Philistines heard the sound of the war cry and asked, what's this loud shout in the Hebrews' camp? Well, when the Philistines discovered that the ark of the Lord had entered the camp, they panicked. A god has entered their camp, they said. Woe to us! Nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us! Who will rescue us from these magnificent gods? These are the gods that slaughtered the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. See, they were used to gods. Every nation in that culture had their gods. And so they think, well, this is just another god among many gods. And so they're worried about it. They'd obviously heard about the Israelites and what had happened with them in coming out of Egypt. In verse 9, it says, show some courage and be men, Philistines. Otherwise, you'll serve the Hebrews just as they served you. Now, be men and fight. So in other words, hey, let's muster up all the gusto that we can so that we can defeat the Israelites. So, although their enemies may have been wrong in their understanding about God, and they certainly were, they knew that they had a real shot of winning this battle. Because for them, it was all up to them. And the Israelites were not going to be able to defeat them because God was not going to fight for them. And so you see it. Verse 10, Philistines fought and Israel was defeated. And each man fled to his tent. The slaughter was severe. 30,000 of the Israelite foot soldiers fell. Then it says, the ark of God was captured and Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, died. Now they went from losing 4,000 in the first battle to losing 30,000 in the second. Do you think God's teaching them a lesson here? God is certainly saying to them, he's saying, look, you're putting your trust in this ark, and you guys are allowing Hophni and Phinehas to act like fools, and everything is going worldly. I mean, you guys are not standing up for what's right anymore. So when we continue to place our faith in the wrong place, it just leads to bigger and bigger failures. And sometimes it seems like Christians have a hard time learning the lesson, you know. We have a hard time hearing what God is saying, because the sad reality is we fall in love with our sin. And as you look at your life, you think about your life, the reality is that you may be clinging today tenaciously to some sin, some attitude, or some sin, some habit. And you love giving yourself over to that. And it might even be something that nobody else knows about but God. But it's weakening you, and it weakens the church too when we hold on to our sin. Because you see, there are ways that we misplace our faith today, just like they did. Sometimes, I think we misplace our faith like this. We think, sometimes, if I stay faithful to God, if I go to church, I read my Bible, I pray, I witness, then everything's going to go well for me. Have you ever told yourself that? I think sometimes I've told myself that over the years. Or we say something like this. Well, if I just raise my kids right, they're going to turn out right. Because we cling to that promise in Proverbs, train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he won't depart from it. As though that's some kind of a universal promise. If you know how Proverbs work, you know that's not a universal promise. It's general truth. But there can be exceptions. You could do everything right as a parent. Well, you probably won't. But even if you did, that doesn't guarantee you that your children are going to turn out the way you want them to. But the sad thing is that it all leads to a tremendous loss. Let's finish up the chapter and just look at the loss. That same day, verse 12, a Benjaminite man ran from the battlefield and came to Shiloh. His clothes were torn and there was dirt on his head. See, this is the way that you would say, you could say visually, I've got bad news. You come in with your clothes torn and you got dirt all over your head. You know, it was a symbolic way of saying bad news. In verse 13, when he arrived, there was Eli sitting on his chair beside the road, watching, because he was anxious about the ark of God. When the man entered the city to give a report, the entire city cried out. So you can just sit, you know, you can just hear everybody just saying, hey, what's the news? Well, you know, about the battle. What is it? And Eli's sitting there, of course, and he's an old man now. We get a little more description of him. Verse 14, Eli heard the outcry and asked, why this commotion? The man quickly came and reported to Eli. And then verse 15, at that time, Eli was 98 years old and his eyes didn't move because he couldn't see. So when it tells us in the previous verse he was watching, what it really means is he was just sitting there, and he was really listening more than he was able to see, because he really couldn't see. "What happened, my son?" Eli asked. Well, verse 17, the messenger answered, "Israel has fled from the Philistines, and also there was a great slaughter among the people. Your two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the ark of God has been captured." Now, notice what happens next. Verse 18. When he mentioned his two sons being dead, no, that's not what it says. He knew those guys were bad news. And he'd already been told by Samuel. Remember when little Samuel had that vision? He said, "Your sons are going to die." So Eli knew that his sons were going to die. He was ready for that. That was not a surprise to him. Because Eli, although he was far from perfect, he did believe in God. Right? He was a man who trusted. But look at what happens. When the guy mentioned the ark of God, Eli fell backward off the chair by the city gate. And since he was old and heavy, his neck broke and he died. Eli had judged Israel 40 years. He heard that the ark was taken. And he knew that he was responsible for that ark, being the head priest. And it just devastated him. He knew that spelled total defeat for the Israelites. Because perhaps they got this unhealthy confidence in the ark from Eli. Putting more faith in the ark than in the God of the ark. Perhaps that was part of the problem there. Because sometimes that's what religious leaders do, is they don't even realize it, but they begin to encourage people to put their faith somewhere besides the Lord. Well, verse 19, Eli's daughter-in-law, the wife of Phinehas, was pregnant and about to give birth. When she heard the news about the capture of God's ark and the deaths of her father-in-law and her husband, she collapsed and gave birth because her labor pains came on her. And then it says, as she was dying, the women taking care of her said, "Don't be afraid, you've given birth to a son." But she didn't respond or pay attention. She named the boy Ichabod. Everybody sees the headless horseman there, right? That's another story. Anyway, saying the glory has departed from Israel, referring to the capture of the ark of God and the deaths of her father-in-law and her husband. "The glory has departed from Israel," she said, because the ark of God has been captured. You know what? She's not really right, is she? She thinks that the glory of God has departed because the ark's been captured. She's right that the glory of God has departed. But it's not just because the ark's been captured, folks. It's because the Israelites have forsaken their God. You remember when Moses, in his day, they constructed the tabernacle. And they got everything complete. They had it all set up. And then in the 40th chapter of the book of Exodus, the glory of God comes upon the people, filling the tabernacle. Despite all of those people's failures, they were obedient to follow the instructions of the construction of the tabernacle and all its furnishings exactly the way the Lord had said to do. They did everything right. And so the Lord filled the temple, or the tabernacle. But now, what do we see? We see that years have gone by. Failure after failure has come. And the end result is the glory of God is departed from the people. God is not going to bless disobedience. He's not going to do it. God blesses obedience. Well, may God encourage you to be obedient. May you hear that encouragement. May you yearn for a greater obedience in your own life and in your church. May you pray for it. May you work for it. May you live for it. Each and every day. All right, come and lead us in our closing song.